This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Spy Fat Chicks. And we apologize for not having been around lately. It's been pretty crazy with both of our work schedules.
And the holidays. We've had visitors and visiting.
Yep.
Yeah. So we had parental visitation. We went and saw some friends of ours, well, Spencer and Erie. And we're going to record an episode about that. We promise. There's so much down there we need to go back and eat.
Yes.
To be honest.
Eat and record.
Oh, Erie, Spencer has finally admitted, Erie is a culinary goldmine. There's so much down there. But
you just have to know where to look.
This is officially a pubcast because we are enjoying a few adult beverages.
Yes, yes.
We may wax philosophic about them. And we may have some strong language. But we're talking about something completely unrelated to alcohol, except the fellow has talked about alcohol before.
So we'll try to keep it clean.
We'll try to keep it clean, but we can't promise anything, so we're going to do the pubcast tag with the explicit tag, just so people don't get caught unawares. If the word fuck offends you, turn off now. So first off,
Katie, just don't let your parents know that you're listening to this.
Yes.
Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck.
That is my niece, who does sometimes listen to the podcast. And, you know, I'm totally going to embarrass her and do a shout-out. She made honor roll this semester.
Rock on!
So her mom got her an iPod. So hopefully she's listening to us on her spiffy brand new Nano. So congratulations, Katie. Great
congratulations.
Job.
Congratulations. Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
The clank of PVC.
Yes.
Or polycarbonate clicking together.
Well, let's discuss our barware. We are drinking out of, actually, polycarbonate mugs that are... What's that stuff they're free from?
BPA free.
BPA free.
I love polycarbonate because they call it non-breakable glass. Because it originally came about as a substitute for glass in laboratories. It's shatterproof, it doesn't hold any smells, it's very, very inert. Now, they used to make it, and it had BPA in it, which I understand is some sort of carcinogen byproduct.
It mutates
byproduct.
You,
I
you get
know.
Tentacles, we don't know.
Who knows? But these are BPA-free, so they're better for you.
We picked up this particular set at our local Loblaws Supercenter, so if you're in Canada and you're looking for some polycarbonate, believe it or not, consistently, over the past year, we have seen... good polycarbonate ware at Loblaws, and their stuff is BPA-free. We've seen other stuff at Bed Bath & Beyond up here that they couldn't tell us if it was BPA-free or not.
Right.
So if you're worried about the tumor thing, you may want to be careful with that or do some more research.
Check your Loblaws Supercenter.
Yeah.
You can also check online. I think polycarbonate makes amazing barware because you can take it anywhere. You can take it and sit by the pool. Mm-hmm. You can take it on the patio. We take it out on the balcony.
It
if it gets
up.
Dropped, your drink spills, but at least the glass doesn't shatter.
Yes.
And it doesn't hold any funky scents or any tastes, which to me means it's perfect barware. It's shatterproof glass, basically.
Well, what's nice is it doesn't hold the scents in, because you have one night that you don't rinse your glass out and you have something particularly funky in it, something citrusy.
Right.
Or you just happen to leave an inch of rum and coke or whatever in there, and it's going to smell like that no matter how much you clean it for the next couple
uses. If it's just
regular
plastic, yeah.
But polycarbonate, if you accidentally don't rinse your glass out at the end of the night and you leave all your little... lime wedges in it, it's not really going to mess up the polycarbonate.
Or if
really
you drink beer out of it,
yeah,
and then you decide to go and make a mixed drink, it's not going to smell or taste like beer.
Good stuff, good stuff. So we'll post some links up with some information about that, because Sheila is like the polycarbonate queen.
Yeah.
She
and
is
like
addicted
I said,
to the stuff.
You know, it's nice because it's clear, it's got a nice presentation, you can see the drink inside, but it's very durable, and again, you don't have to worry about it being contaminating the next drink that you make.
And if you're in the SCA, honestly, at 10 feet, if you're following like the 10-foot rule of I don't want people to know it's not authentic at 10 feet, polycarbonate looks like glass at 10
feet. It does.
So
especially
if you get some nice goblets, yeah.
Well, they have all different shapes, too.
Yes.
They have goblets, they
shades
have martini
too.
Glasses, yeah. All kinds of things.
But if you're in the SCA and you're looking for some good feast gear that you want to really stand the test of time, look into some of the polycarbonate ware if you don't mind having the glass in your persona. Because that would be something pricey that a nobleman would have. But hey, you're all supposed to be a nobleman anyway, so who cares?
It would be a Renaissance era
persona. Exactly. But go for it because it looks good. So what we're drinking out of it is our delicious favorite semi-local 40 Creek whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most wonderful time of the year up here.
Mm-hmm.
The LCBO has put out all of their gift packs. It's a particular phenomena to Canada. I don't really see it happen in the States, but up here, when it gets close to the holidays, what's LCBO stand for?
Liquor Control Board of Ontario.
There we go. It's the store with all the booze that is wonderful.
Mm.
They get, because they have the clout to order almost anything they want, they're the largest purchaser of alcohol in the world, pretty much, as a block. they get all these gift packs in, and they put them out for the holidays, because nothing's better than giving booze.
Yeah.
Almost everybody likes it.
Pretty much anybody, unless they're a teetotaler or ex-alcoholic.
And if you get it and you are an ex-alcoholic or a teetotaler, you can usually re-gift it to somebody, and they're not upset.
Or serve it to friends when they come over.
Exactly. But they put out these great gift packs. I mean, you can get the really cool beer sampler packs with nice glasses. You can get
usually they always come with glassware.
Yes.
Like, there was a bunch of Belgian ones that they had the Belgian-style beer glass, where it looks almost like a really ballooned-out...
It was like a short hurricane glass, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Like a Hobbit hurricane glass.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then they had the other one that was, like, the Tastes of Belgium, where they had Hoegaarden, which has, like, a stunted pint glass, and they had another one, which was the balloony one, and they had a different one that went with the different beer and everything, so...
Yeah, so they have all of those. They have hard liquor sets with nice Varrocks glasses and sometimes gear to prepare your alcohol with. Mm. They have nice wine sets that usually come with glasses, or, like, this year the big thing is bags. Like, wine bags that you can carry with you on a picnic or something. And the Jack's Intrigues one, I think, has the nicest set.
Yeah.
Because it's like a nice double carry-all with handles on the top, and it's an insulated bag that you can put...
So it's not going to clank, it's going to stay cool, and it's got a nice handle for you to carry it in.
Mm-hmm. So we had a moment of weakness, and we had 40 Creek, which I adore. This has become probably my
favorite brand.
It is. My favorite liquor. It is hands down my favorite whiskey, considering the price point. Up here in Canada, a fifth is $25. You can get it at duty-free for right around $15 to $20.
Mm-hmm.
So it's comparable to everything else price-wise. It's just so smooth. But they had a 40 Creek glass set with it, which...
It came with two really nice square rocks glasses.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can never have too many rocks glasses. They're great for juice in the morning. They're great if you just want a little bit of something to take your whatever with your vitamins, or if you need some vitamin I or whatever, it's great for that. So we had a moment of weakness and decided, let's get some 40 Creek to enjoy.
And I didn't realize that the bottle was going to be that big, actually. I thought it was going to be a Mickey.
Oh, you thought it was the 350s? No, it's a full fifth, which was awesome. It was a $25 set. I'm sorry, $30 set. The bottles are usually $25. And then
it was like buying it and getting the glasses for $5.
Mm-hmm.
Which, they're really nice glasses. So.
Which, with the gift packs up here, usually you get a really good deal on the glassware that comes with it. So they're totally worth it. I've never seen that outside of Canada. Every once in a while, you get a nice gift set in an American liquor store, especially in Pennsylvania, but not to the quantity where they have a huge display set up like we have in the LCBO.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to me coming from an outsider's viewpoint.
And we have a buddy that works in the warehouse at the LCBO, and he says they always get geared up for the wintertime with the holiday rush and everything, with all the gift packs and everything.
Didn't he say back in September everything started coming into the warehouse?
Yeah.
I mean, they plan ahead. They know the stuff's coming. So, on to what we're actually going to talk about now that we've set the
scene. Because
I think
we've been talking for, almost 10 minutes?
10 minutes almost about nothing. But that's okay.
Because it's a podcast.
It's a podcast. We're supposed to talk about nothing in particular. The plastic clink again.
So, this idea came about while we were eating dinner today.
Mm-hmm.
We decided we're going to record an episode about the Fat Chicks Cookbook and the Alton Brown contribution to it. Because we had today lovely, delicious, tasty chicken wings.
You don't do that justice. We had wings that were so good, you would have thought we brought them home from a good wing restaurant. Almost from Quaker Steak. They were that good. And we started talking, and we said, you know, we use a lot of Alton Brown recipes. We need to just dedicate a whole episode to talking about what we've taken from him that we use regularly that works really well, because it's
rare. Because I think there's probably at least a dozen recipes that we use from the Good Eats television show.
And I should interject right now, if you hear horrible, monstrous snorting noises, it's not us, it's the dog.
Honest, it's not me.
Yes, it's the beast that's roaming around right now. But first off, Good Eats, if you haven't ever heard of it, it's a Food Network show put on by Alton Brown, came out in, 98, 99?
Yeah, probably about that, because I got turned on to it just before I met you, so...
It's been running ever since then, so over a decade. I think he's on his 12th, 13th, 14th season, something disgusting.
At least episode 13, if not episode 14.
Season.
Season.
That's okay, it's a podcast.
Woo!
So, we'll blame the alcohol for being stupid. Yes, we've only had one drink, but that's why we can't remember the difference between season and episode.
Woo!
Yes, indeed. So anyway, it's been around for a long time. Alton Brown, if you don't watch his show, you may know him from Food Network as being the commentator for the American version of Iron Chef.
Yeah.
He's also done another show called Feasting on Asphalt.
Yeah, that's him on his motorcycle driving around. Kind of like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, but I think a little bit less structured.
His gorgeous BMW motorcycle.
Yes. I am envious of his wheels.
I am envious of his motorcycle as well. But he does a really nice, he's done 2 seasons of that. I don't know if they did a third or not.
Yeah.
Really cool show, too.
And he's also on The Best Thing I Ever Ate, where different food chefs, like they have Giada from the Italian, I'm going to shoot it like a porno
yeah.
food show, I don't know.
Giada, we like her, but one of her shows that she did...
The first show that she ever did, like everything after that
series.
Is good.
Yeah.
But the first show she ever did, it was lit like it was an adult film.
It was very soft, like filters on the camera and everything.
Yeah.
And it looked weird.
It showed really weird close-ups of her hands doing stuff, and then it would cut to her, and she's got this weird forced smile on her face.
I think they fired the director after that, because the next series that she ended up doing after she did that, it looks totally
normal.
It's
like Everyday Italian.
Yeah, it's great.
She has a personality.
Oh, yeah,
she smiles, but is genuine,
yeah.
You know, and she talks about different stuff, and it just seems so much less forced.
Much more natural, exactly.
Yes.
So, Good Eats, the stance that Alton Brown goes with behind this whole thing is he tries to teach you not just here's a recipe that's really tasty. He tries to teach you the why behind it. Why does it cook this way? Why do we do it this way? It's really scientific.
Yeah, but why does this technique work better than this technique? I'm just going to throw out an example. The biscuit method that he says. If you're going to use the biscuit method, you're going to just mix the stuff together, either with your hands or with utensil, until it comes together. And then you're going to step away.
Muffin method.
No, it's
no?
the biscuit method.
Biscuit
because
method?
If you overmix it, then it gets really, really tough, and you don't want tough biscuits,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, because he also does the muffin method where you have to stir it, and then you don't think you're done. It's like you think you have to stir it 2 more times, and you just step away. Don't
yeah.
touch it. You know, you want
just
to,
leave it.
You don't. Exactly.
Just step away. It's okay. It'll be fine. It doesn't matter if there's like the little pockets of flour or something, just step away.
It's going to be good.
Well, the biscuit method, because we have one of his books, it came from his
books, actually.
It came from his grandmother, because his grandmother made such great biscuits later on in the day. Because that's when her arthritis was acting up. So she didn't mix the things as vigorously as she would have in the morning when her hands were somewhat more pain-free. So then he put the 2 and 2 together and realized for a tender, flaky, whatever you're making, if you treat it gently, don't overmix it, don't knead it, then that's the right method to use.
So I was an okay cook. When I met you, I could cook a few things, but I didn't really know what I was doing. She had me start watching Good Eats with her because it is a highly entertaining show.
It's educational.
It's educational. I mean, you knew
funny.
A lot about food already when I met you because you had already gone to school for it some. You really paid attention to what you learned. You paid attention to what you had seen on TV. You had a sound foundation. I, on the other hand, just kind of did what my grandmother told me to do. And I had the basics, but I didn't know why I had the basics. I just knew I did them because. So I started paying attention more to what Alton Brown was saying and showing, and I became a much better cook. Honestly, me now and me 10 years ago in the kitchen, totally different person. Now I'm willing to go improvise and do this and do that, and I'm not afraid it's going to come out horrible.
Exactly.
It's not going to be like onion ice cream or something.
Well, the thing is, baking is much less forgiving. You pretty much have to do the steps the way that they're laid out, whereas cooking is much more like jazz. You can feel free to improvise. If you know how the ingredients behave, you're free to, you know, not measure like our grandmothers did and just pour in what looks right. And you just know, okay, you can picture it in your head. This is what a cup of flour looks like. And you can just scoop it in. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's the same amount as a cup, you know. Or if I grate up a bunch of cheese, I don't necessarily have to measure it. I can go, well, that
looks
like a
enough.
Cup.
Yeah.
That looks like enough. The other things that we end up using, besides the wing recipe, which actually we should just talk about that,
I want to start with the techniques, but we've learned a lot of techniques from him, too many to mention. But the point of that is just watching the show alone gave us a good foundation that we've really taken it and run with, just as home cooks. Not chefs, we're not caterers, we don't do this professionally, we cook for ourselves and our friends sometimes. But it's given us a good grounding that we could pick up almost any recipe now just by paying attention to what the guy does. And we can really make something with it. We can make our own changes because we understand how everything interacts in the recipe because he's like the Mr. Wizard of food.
Behave. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's Bill Nye, the science guy of the food world. But yeah, the wing recipe. So one of our favorite recipes of him, it's a new recipe that we just picked up because it's a recent season. It is, oh my God. We got a steamer set from a store up here in Canada called HomeSense. And they get like the end runs of stuff and the stuff
they're like
that didn't
the big
sell.
Lots of home stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they have a little bit of furniture, they have a lot of kitchen stuff, they have a lot of flatware, mm-hmm. crockery, stuff like that.
So two people who love Asian cooking and Asian food as much as we do, you know eventually we're going to buy a nice steamer set. Mm-hmm. So we found a great set there for, like, filthy cheap. We brought it home. It has a two-tiered steamer set. Nice, like, what is it? Six-quart? Four-quart pan that goes with it with two nice steamer metal steamer baskets to fit on top of it. And then we watched an episode of Alton Brown about wings.
So, basically, the secret to doing the wings is not worrying about trying to get a commercial fryer that can get hot enough to cook the wing without it being bloody in the middle or anything like that. What you want to do is you want to steam them for 10 minutes.
10 minutes. And get then, them up and steam them on medium heat for 10 minutes.
That pretty much cooks them.
Then all you got to cook at 10 minutes being steamed, honestly. Yeah.
Then all you got to do is crisp them up. Mm-hmm. So then you throw them in the oven at 425 mm-hmm. for 25 minutes on each side. He says 20, we do it for an extra 5 because we like them crispy.
And we're also impatient, and we don't dry them like we're supposed to. He says there's an extra step in the middle where you take them, you put them in the fridge for an hour, you kind of pat them dry. Because once you remove the moisture, you don't have to worry about the skin getting gummy. Right. We like to play it, like, loose and dangerous, so we just whip them in the oven hot.
And I totally did. I didn't even pat them down. I just threw them in the oven.
But they came out great. I mean, these were just amazing, crisp, delicious wings. Mm.
And then after you do that, then I have used the wing sauce recipe from Deepy Dough, where it's just butter and then hot sauce. Mm-hmm. So I threw a tablespoon of butter into a coffee cup, microwaved it in the oven for, like, 30 seconds to melt it. Poured that into the really big mixing bowl, because you want to have a lot of room to be able to mix all the wings and make sure they're coated. And then I used probably, 6 ounces of...
Almost, about a cup. It'd be almost 8 ounces, I think. Yeah. Because you just half that bottle.
The Red Hot sauce.
Frank's Red Hot. Oh, the go-to sauce for wings. Tabasco is good as an additive. Frank's, you want for, like,
I like throwing Tabasco on cheese pizza. That's good. But I like cooking with Frank's. Mm-hmm. So then I mix that all together, and then I threw all the hot, crispy wings into it and mixed it all up. And then... is perfect. If this wasn't a marriage meant to be, I don't know what is, because Tracy likes all the flats and I like all the drumettes.
Yes, so we split them out. We have an even amount because we bought a big thing of raw wings from the butcher department.
Yeah, and actually, that's another thing, too, is he shows you how to actually get a whole wing, because it's much cheaper to buy whole wings than it is to buy them already cut. And all you do is you take the wing and squeeze it together almost like... Remember those hand-strengthening things that you had when you were kids? And you're like,
I love those
leftover
things.
From the 80s, right? You squeeze the wing together like that, and you take the knife and you make a little cut, and that then you turn it around, open it up, mm-hmm. and then you can pretty much just cut right through it.
Yeah.
And you just chop the little tips off, too.
Yeah, and the tips, he said, you can just toss out, or if you're totally animal retentive like he is, you can whip them all in a freezer bag and save them for when you do a pot of soup, and just throw them in as extra stuff for the soup.
Throw them in with the carcass, or...
Yeah.
With any other chicken scraps that you have, boil it down and make some great stock.
If you are people who only have a fridge-freezer combo like us, you may not want to do that. If you happen to be one of the lucky few who have a chest freezer, we hate you. And you probably have the room to
do
that.
We're envious.
Oh, we are envious. There will be a small chest freezer in our future. Oh, yes, there will. But right. Anyway, that is one thing. If you are a good eats devotee, you will probably want to eventually get a chest freezer.
Get as much freezer space as you possibly can afford and are prepared to make room for.
Because freezing is key. So, yeah, this is such a simple recipe, but what really strikes a chord with me is it doesn't just taste good. It's actually a fairly healthy way to eat wings because, one, you're not frying them.
Yeah.
Which, right there, you're like, woo, look at that.
Yeah.
And then,
you're not
two,
adding the calories from the oil.
Exactly. And then, two, I walked by after we were done to rinse off the plates and looked at the stove where Sheila had baked the wings on a grate on top of a cookie sheet, and I just looked at all the grease and the nasty stuff that dripped out when she had baked them. I'm like, oh my god, all that came out of the wings? She's like, yeah, and there was a bunch of them over I steamed it, too, that came out from the skin. I'm like, oh my god.
When you steam them, the water actually pretty much almost looks like chicken soup, because it's got all those yellow circles of grease in the water.
Yeah,
exactly. The schmaltz.
The schmaltz, yeah. So it's a great recipe. It's fairly healthy, which he has tried to move over the past couple years to healthier stuff. And it just tastes fantastic. So this is one of the things we find really attractive about the show. But that's just one recipe that we're going to talk about. There's a whole bunch after that.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch that we actually have in heavy rotation.
Yeah, like, let's not work backwards. Pork Wellington. Oh, yes. My God. Not healthy at all, but God, is it delicious.
Well, it's not unhealthy either, though.
No, well, it's the puff pastry. It's not good for you. But
well,
if you eat it in moderation.
It depends on what you're serving with it.
True.
It totally depends on what you're serving with it.
That could count as the carb. Anyway, those who aren't familiar, it's based on beef Wellington, which is pretty much beef wrapped in pastry dough and baked, like a tenderloin of beef.
Right.
He did an episode about we should eat more pork. Pork is wonderful. And he's right. Pork is delicious. It's fairly healthy. If you get the right cuts, it's very low in fat.
Right. As far as the environmental impact goes, it takes less resources to raise a pig to slaughtering weight than it does to raise a cow.
Yeah. So if you're a dirty hippie and you're not eating pork, you're not doing it right. Yeah. Just saying. So you better start chomping on the bacon. That's it.
Because bacon's awesome.
It is. So for the pork Wellington, what he does is he jazzes it up. And he takes, first he gets some prosciutto, and he lays it out into a sheet and puts it between wax paper and rolls it flat so you have a nice flat sheet. This is if you want to make it pretty. Then you can do the Sheila method where it's not very pretty at all. Yeah, it's awesome.
But it tastes awesome.
So you make your nice sheet of prosciutto. Then you take pork tenderloins, and pork tenderloins aren't that big loin that you get, that you cut up for pork chops if you like to cut your own pork chops for stuffing, or you cut into roasts or whatever. Pork tenderloins are the two skinny roasts that you get that are usually packaged in pairs.
Yeah.
You can get them singly, but I've only seen them sold that way maybe once in the store.
Yeah.
So you come in pairs, you take them, you there's a little bit of skin on them, I forget
it's
what
it's called.
Calls
silver
it.
Skin?
Silver skin.
Or if you just take a thin bladed knife,
like a fine knife.
Yeah, you can just kind of make a cut and then peel that off.
Yeah.
Because it's not digestible, so it's just chewy. It's like gristle, right?
A favorite Alton Brown phrase, it brings nothing to the party. Yeah. So, but you kind of take that off and you get rid of it. You take your two pork loins, you put those in the middle of the prosciutto, and you take dried apple bits. You can get these chopped up roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go to Bulk Barn, but you can probably find them in any grocery store.
Yeah. Usually the baking department has it, because you use it in a bunch of different recipes there, too.
Yeah.
So you take those, you sprinkle them between the two pork loins, you smush those together, you wrap it up in the prosciutto. So you have pork-wrapped pork, which is awesome.
Already,
in and of
you should all be on board.
Yes.
Unless you're a vegetarian.
In which case, we have a lovely soy product we're going to talk about later for you with a recipe.
Yeah.
So then you take that, you whip it into a puff pastry shell.
After you've painted the puff pastry shell with Dijon mustard.
Preferably homemade. Yes, and Sheila has a killer recipe for homemade Dijon mustard, so she should put that up, too. So she paints it with her homemade mustard. I paint it with her homemade mustard, too, because I'm too lazy to make it myself.
But if you don't make it yourself, just go ahead and get, like, Grey Poupon or whatever.
I was trying to think of that brand.
Excuse me, sir, do you have any Grey Poupon?
Yes. So you wrap it all up, you put it in the puff pastry, and you bake it for a ridiculously short amount of time. It's, what, 25 to 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And we told my dad about it, and he said, well, isn't the puff pastry going to burn before the pork's done? Well, no, because you have two separate small pieces of pork that are barely 2 inches in thickness each. So they're going to cook quickly, too. And then
you take them, and because they kind of look like a baseball bat, you flip the one so that the fat ends at the skinny end of the other, so it makes it more even.
Exactly.
More of an even mass.
Yes. And you should eat it fairly, not raw, but you want to eat it medium rare.
It's
medium.
It's pink in the center, but it's not red.
Exactly.
Which, I know everyone's like, trichinosis! But
we haven't had a case of trichinosis from commercial pork in like 30 or 40 years. It's ridiculous.
Right.
You're not going to get it from your pork
tenderloin. And even if it is pink in the middle, it's still over 140 degrees, which means all bacteria is dead.
Trichinosis dies at 137, I want to say. But don't quote me on that. We will post a link to trichinosis so you know for sure where it dies.
Right.
So if you go even to 140, 145, you definitely have a good safety margin there.
Exactly.
So then all you do is you pull it out, you let it rest so all the juices kind of suck back into it, and you cut it into nice thin slices with an electric knife.
Electric knives are wonderful, the best, I think.
Yeah. And then you just serve it, and you have the puff pastry on it, so you kind of have a carb there.
So you don't really need to make potatoes or rice. If you just want to serve it with some vegetables on the side, that's probably plenty.
You can go with carby vegetables for it. Like,
carrots. Sweet potato works really nice with
that. Sweet potato goes with it, because it's kind of a carb, but it's kind of a vegetable. Carrots go great with it. Couple times we've done carrots.
Broccoli goes nice with it,
too. Broccoli goes nice with it, too.
Oh,
and it's
Brussels
so
sprouts.
Fast.
We love Brussels sprouts, but we're weirdos. I don't know.
But it looks complicated. It looks like you slaved away for hours. But the prep time is maybe 10 or 15 minutes. If you know, once you make it once, you really speed it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just looks awesome.
As like a party dish, it's like A1.
Mm-hmm.
Because it totally looks like you spent all day slaving away with Martha Stewart magazines all over you.
Well,
but really, it's just the technique of putting it together.
Well, Beef Wellington's one of those dishes where people are like, oh, Beef Wellington. It's
ooh,
like Baked
so
Alaska.
Fancy.
Oh, my. Oh. And then you, Pork Wellington. Oh, my. How nouveau, you know? So it works really well, and that's another recipe he does on the show. It's fantastic. Take it, go to the website he has, or rather Food Network, get the recipe and try it. I'm going to give that dog something.
Yes, you better. Besides a punch in the face.
Punch in the snout. I feel like I've just been extorted for, like, protection money.
Yeah. Well, especially since it seems you rattled above the refrigerator. He was, like, looking around the corner to see what you were doing. Anyway,
on to other delicious recipes that we're going to wax philosophic about.
Macaroni and cheese.
Oh, the best macaroni and cheese recipe I've ever had. And I feel like a blasphemer saying that, because my grandmother made some pretty good baked macaroni and cheese.
The only thing that I'll interject now is, if you're going to change anything about an Alton Brown or Good Eats recipe, you can probably cut the salt in half. He goes crazy with the cheese, but with the salt. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is, but I know salt makes things taste better, but you don't need to use quite that much of it. Mm-hmm. And with the baked macaroni and cheese recipe, I made it once, just straight from the card, and it was really, really salty.
It was like a salt lick. Yeah. It was up there.
It was edible, but it was really salty.
We had kind of just started that phase where we were cutting our salt in our diets anyway.
Yeah.
So to us, it was
super salty.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's a great recipe. It's, you just boil the macaroni. There is a cheese sauce that you make where you melt some butter, throw some flour in to make a roux. You cook the flour and butter together just enough to get rid of the floury taste. Then you pour in, you can use either like light cream or whole milk or some sort of dairy product.
A milk-based product that has some kind of fat content in it.
Yeah. The lowest I would go would be 2%. Whole milk tastes good, I think, and light cream tastes really good.
We're horrible. We use light cream a lot because we don't drink milk. I'm lactose intolerant, so milk does very bad things to me. And Sheila has started developing some of that because she doesn't eat as many or drink as many milk products as she used to because she lives with me.
Right.
If you don't use it, you have a tendency to lose it sometimes. In my case, I've mostly lost it. I can still eat some cheeses, but even too much cheese really disagrees with me. But I'm not so far that I can't have, like, any dairy product. I have some repercussions I have to deal with. And lactate is awesome for that.
If you want ice cream, you can just take some lactate and you're good to go.
Yes, exactly. So we get cream because we don't drink the milk. We don't go through it very quickly. As soon as you open milk, it goes bad, like the next day.
Yeah.
And to me, all milk smells bad. Even as a kid, I'd sniff the milk, like fresh open. I thought, oh, it's not good. The only time milk actually smelled good and tasted good to me was when it was bad. So we don't trust my judgment on that anyway. But the cream lasts longer. You can go buy a carton of cream and you look at the expiration date on it, and it's what?
It's like
3 or 4 weeks later?
It's like a month ahead, yeah.
Yes, because I don't know if it's the fat content or if it's how it's pasteurized or what, but the cream will last longer. So we'll go get a little carton of cream when we do our grocery shopping, and it hangs out in the fridge for a couple of weeks, and we can still pull it out and still use it to cook with because it's not so bad. It's good. It's not so bad as in it's not expired.
Exactly. And then even after it's opened,
it still lasts
for longer than milk does.
Exactly. And we don't, because we live in Canada, and it's the land of many creams, in the States, I only ever remember, like, whipping cream and half, and that was it. Up here, we have 5%, 10%, 20-something,
like 35%. And then there's whipping cream, which I think is like 45%.
I have no idea. There is a lot of cream at the grocery store. You go to the cream display, the cream case.
The dairy case.
And you're overwhelmed. No, it's a cream case. The milk is next to it. The cream has its own case.
That is true.
I mean, you go to Tim Hortons, you have your choice of different creams to put in your coffee sometimes.
Right. And then there's skim milk, 2%, and then what you guys call whole milk, we call homogenized milk or homo milk.
So my point of this is whole milk is 3% milk fat or fat. The light cream that we use is only 5% fat. So for the cup we're using within a recipe to go from the 3% to the 5%, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
If anything's going to kill us, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be using the light cream. So we do use light cream in most of our recipes. But we also scale back sometimes on some of the butter we put in, and I'll get to that in another recipe.
Oh, that's true. So. Yeah. So after you make that, you throw in a bunch of shredded cheddar cheese. We like to use old cheddar or sharp cheddar. And then that melts together. You pour the noodles in, mix it all together, and then throw it into a dish. And then, this is funny because it always looks like it's never going to work. You put in 3 tablespoons of butter into a frying pan, and you melt that. And then you take a cup of breadcrumbs and put that in. And it never looks like there's going to be enough breadcrumbs to absorb that, but it does. It becomes all buttery and tasty. And you pour that on top, spread it around.
Scatter it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you bake it in the oven. And then it comes out amazing. Oh,
best macaroni and cheese I've ever had. And I don't like baked macaroni and cheese. Now, we do take the onions out of the recipe because he does add chopped onions to it. We're like, no, we don't like onions that much. We take it out. But you can do the full-blown recipe if you want. I'm a fan of how Sheila makes it. It comes out great.
It's two great meals. For leftovers.
Yeah, it does two meals for the two of us. We throw it into our giant Corningware dish. We cut it into quarters. We each take a quarter, and the next day we both have lunch, depending where we're working or whatever's going on. So really good stuff. And it's an Alton Brown recipe. It was part of an episode he actually did that was for kids.
Yeah, Cook With Your Kids Week for Food TV.
Yeah, and he was making macaroni and cheese for his nephew, and he did the baked recipe. He did a fried macaroni and cheese episode where you use leftover baked macaroni and cheese and you deep fry it.
Yeah.
And then he did like a homemade version of like instant Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, it was the stovetop version.
Stovetop version, which looked really good too. We've never made that one. But this is, the baked macaroni and cheese is one of our go-tos. We make it, what, every other week?
Yeah, probably. We usually make it a couple times a month. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. And it's great if you have to go to a potluck or something. You could put it in a big old crock kind of thing and take it with you. It's good stuff. So next up on our favorite Alton Brown episodes, or rather recipes, is definitely the shepherd's pie.
Oh, yes.
Because we go from using the same pan, the same pot that we put the macaroni and cheese in to bake, and we put the shepherd's pie in the same thing. Last time I made it, I actually had to eat the rest of the macaroni and cheese so I could make a shepherd's pie. Oh, the hardship, the hardship.
Most unfortunate.
And he, because he tries to be entertaining while he does this, it's not just him standing there saying, today we're going to make this. He tries to jazz it up with something interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. And it was right after Sweeney Todd came out. So he does it as like a Sweeney Todd episode.
In the episode, he was playing one of his ancestors, Dr. Brown. And then he had some chick playing Helena Bonham Carter's role as Mrs. Levitt.
Yeah, and it's hilarious. And the whole episode's devoted to doing the shepherd's pie.
Well, it's meat pies.
Meat pies. Well, yeah, meat pies. But he does the shepherd's pie in it. And we took the recipe and we tweaked it a little bit. Because that's a nice thing about Alton Brown's recipes. If you've watched enough, or rather you know enough about food, you can go ahead and twist them around a little bit and make them easier on yourself.
Exactly. And in this instance, you use the recipe, but then instead of using ground beef,
three kinds of meats, I think. Yeah, he uses lamb and something else.
Lamb, maybe sausage, or pork, and beef.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Instead of using that combination, you usually get stewing meat, and you take one of his other recipes for the ribs, or for the ribs also used for
pulled pork. Well, that's our own innovation, I think. That's not really a recipe he did.
Oh.
Yeah, that was one we totally twisted and mutated ourselves.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we take a recipe he made for rib rub, and we throw a little bit of that on the stew meat, and we braise the stew meat for a couple hours, and we let it cool, and then we pull it apart after it's cooled and everything's recongealed back together, because the connective tissue melted out, but if you separate it right away, it goes to mush. You let it sit for a little bit and cool, and then you separate it, and it still
has some
shape.
It's like you're making like a shredded beef kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah.
And instead of using the ground meat, you use the shredded beef, but it's got that extra spice, that extra flavor kick from using the rub.
Exactly. We do that just because we like the texture of that better than the ground meat in it. We tried it with the ground meat, and it wasn't bad. But we thought, you know, we can do better. And we actually
we
did.
We upped the ante. Yes.
The arrogance of us, we actually, to our tastes, it is better. But his recipe, it is solid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
if you just went straight to the recipe, it'd be fine.
Anybody who's ever seen me take leftovers of it to lunch is just intrigued. They're like, what is that? Well, it's a shepherd's pie. Well, that looks like a really good shepherd's pie. I don't like shepherd's pie, but yours looks good. So it's just one of those ones that you only have to maybe tweak a couple of things. And totally randomly, the one time I was making roasted garlic for something else, and I decided, you know, we were making shepherd's pie, and we threw some garlic in with the shepherd's pie for the potatoes on the top. And we did garlic mashed potatoes for the top, and oh my god, it's a match made in heaven.
The ante. Again.
Good stuff. Yeah. So if you're into doing your own shepherd's pie, totally do some roasted garlic in the mashed potatoes. It's 100% worth it. You can roast it while you're doing the beef or something if you're going to braise your beef to do it. Mm-hmm. Well, garlic's the kind of thing, you can even roast it ahead of time and freeze it and just pull out what you need, you know, chisel off a chunk.
Well, the thing is, too, a lot of our recipes interlock. Because I'm thinking about the leftover mashed potatoes that you had from making the shepherd's pie. I mix it with a bit of flour to make a dough and fry it and make potato farls. Mm-hmm. We have a very interlocking set of recipes and then throw in stuff from time to time just for fun.
And some of it's necessity. After a while, you know, we just start building on that. Like the garlic, the roasted garlic. I think that at that time I was making it to make garlic butter.
Yeah.
Which, take a pound of garlic, or a pound of garlic, dear God, dear God. Take a pound of butter.
You'd be very healthy, though.
You would, because nobody would go near you. That comes from my family on Christmas Eve. There's a lot of elaborate rituals you're supposed to do Christmas Eve if you're Eastern Orthodox or Ukrainian Eastern Orthodox. With herbs this and eat that and do this. We have totally distilled it down to you take a piece of raw garlic and you eat it with your pasca as your first bite of the dinner and you're covered. And it's supposed to give you health. Really gives you health because nobody wants to get near you after you've eaten an entire clove of raw garlic.
So people that have the flu are like, even I can smell that.
Yeah,
I'm getting
away
from you.
Or if you have the flu and you eat it, you keep other people away. So, but you take a head of garlic, you take a pound of butter, you let the butter soften, you take the garlic, you throw it in a little thing, like a little tiny ramekin.
Yeah.
Put some oil in it. You bake it until it gets soft. You pull it out. You drain off most of the oil. You keep a little bit. You throw that in with the butter, because if you keep some of the oil, it'll make the butter soft and spreadable even after it's been refrigerated again.
Yeah. It's like your natural version of trans fat.
Yeah.
Without the bad things that come with that.
You throw the garlic in with the pound of butter. You beat the hell out of it for like 5 or 10 minutes. You whip it, over whip it. You whip it until it's dead. And then you take it and divide it into quarters, you whip it on a piece of wax paper, and you roll it up into pieces that look like giant candy rolls, and freeze it. And you have 4 sticks of garlic butter. You can saute with it, you can throw it in your mashed potatoes if you just want a hint of garlic. It's great if you're making hash browns.
Yeah.
It's great for vegetables. It's garlic bread alone. You just soften it a little bit, smear it on your bread, toast it in your broiler. It's perfect. It's such a multitasker.
And even that, the pouring it into the wax paper and rolling it into a tube, we took that from an Alton Brown episode
with
as well.
Taffy.
Because, he made herb butter too.
Yeah, that too, yeah, exactly. It's just a perfect technique. So you can do so much with that. But on to the next favorite that we have that we eat all the time.
I'm drawing a blank. Maybe I need another drink.
Perhaps you do need another
drink. Synapse lubricant.
Synapse lubricant. Go make another drink for yourself.
Oh!
Oh!
Ha ha! Bonjour!
Get cheesy and surrender monkey. So we're back with refreshed drinks.
And refreshed bladders.
Sheila's memory as well.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is a breakfast favorite. And this recipe isn't necessarily groundbreaking, but the technique used is another great technique. It's for crepes, and he makes them in the blender.
Yes. And I mean, those of you who've listened to the podcast before may have recalled me talking about how, because my parents were teachers, we never really ate breakfast together as a family during the week. We just were too busy. You know, Dad's leaving at like 6:45 in the morning. I'm catching the bus at whatever time when my sister was still living at home because she's so much older than me. I mean, she was catching the bus even earlier than me.
Even more.
My sister's like 90. No, I'm kidding. But it just was one of those things that we didn't eat breakfast together during the week, so we always ate a Saturday morning family breakfast. Mom would pull out all the stops and cook like a fiend and do this huge family breakfast. And it was great, because it was more like a brunch, to be honest. We called it a brunch.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like a 3-year-old Tracy running around going, yay, brunch, you know?
Well, she's made it before we've visited.
Yes, it's just,
so, and it's
she
really,
makes brunch.
Really good.
But I remember we would do waffles, and we would do, like, bacon and eggs and hash browns and all this other stuff. But Dad would always cook the crepes when we did crepes. And he'd pull out the
big
pan.
It's like a speciality.
Yeah, Mom would mix the batter, but Dad would do the crepes. I remember Mom filling the mixing bowl with crepe batter and everything. And it was kind of a pain in the neck to mix it all, because she had this huge bowl filled with all this batter. Then we saw the episode of Good Eats with the crepes, and I wanted to make crepes for you, because you'd never really had them.
Yeah, I'd never had them before.
And I remember Mom making them, and I thought, you know, they're good, but let's give his recipe a shot. And they're as good, if not better, and doing it in the blender, it cuts the time probably in half. You whip everything in the
dishes,
blender.
Yeah, it's less effort.
You blend it, you walk away for 10 or 15 minutes, let all the bubbles kind of settle out of it, and then you just scoop it out as needed with your ladle.
Yeah.
It's an awesome recipe. It's a solid recipe. It's a great foundation for so many cool things you can do with crepes. Like the one day, I know you came home from work, and we just made pulled pork the day before, and there was leftover pulled pork in the fridge, and we did crepes for breakfast, so Sheila grabs a crepe, because they didn't sweeten them or anything.
Yeah,
she starts whipping
neutral.
Like pulled pork and barbecue sauce into one of the crepes and rolls it up and eats it. And I thought, hey, there you go.
Yeah, because you can definitely make savory crepes. You don't necessarily always have to make them sweet or make them dessert crepes,
yes.
Right?
But I would recommend, hands down, anybody who asks me about making crepes, I send them to his recipe, because he does have one of the most versatile, forgiving crepe recipes out there. And if you're a little shaky on the technique because they sound like they're intimidating, but they're really not hard to make, watch his episode on it, and you'll feel 100% at ease about it.
I mean, really, all you need is a blender and a heavy
frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
I did splurge, and by splurge, I mean I spent a whole $10 at Walmart, and I got one of the Star Frit flat round pans. It has almost
Isn't it advertised as an omelet pan?
Yeah,
but I use it for crepes.
It's because it's heavy, even though it has no edges on the side. It's probably heavier than an edge.
It's got a really thick
pan.
Bottom.
Yeah. So it holds that heat in, and then you can back off on the heat so you're not burning your crepes, and they still cook nuclear fast. You still get the nice browning on it, and
well,
it has a great slick
evenly
surface.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not got hot spots in
it. Yeah, because the weight distributes the heat perfectly. I mean, they make great crepes, and it was a whole $10 for the pan. I love it to death.
Yeah.
I kind of want to, while they still have them, go buy a second and squirrel it away in the cabinet.
For when that one gets all scratched up.
Because I keep using it for other things. Because another technique he talks about is searing meats. Mm-hmm. And how you have certain... You can cook steaks on your stovetop, but you need to do it quick, hot, and fast. I don't own cast iron yet, though that will change soon.
Yeah.
So in place of cast iron, I sometimes am naughty when I make breakfast steaks for us, and I use my crepe pan because it's the heaviest frying pan I own.
Right.
That's going to get up to the heat I need to be able to give a good, quick sear on these thin, fast fry steaks that Sheila and I really like. Oh, at our local Loblaws, they sell these steaks that are very thin. They're called fast fry steaks. When I was growing up, I heard fast fry steak, and I used to think, you know, steak 'em, that like particulate meat.
Right, it's like
piece,
pre-shaved.
Like a wafer.
Yeah.
It was like formed ground meat cut into like a wafer. But these are real steaks, and they're tenderized and ready to go. And Sheila likes them for breakfast sometimes.
Similar to skirt steak, which are used for fajitas.
Yeah, close to that, or flank steak sometimes it's called. Mm-hmm. So we take those, and all you have to do is heat up your heaviest pan, put a little salt and pepper on each side, throw it on the pan for maybe 45 seconds to a minute on each side, which is one of the techniques that he talks about how to cook a steak on a stovetop. And then throw it on your plate with your eggs, and I like some salsa with it, because for some reason the steak and salsa really strikes a chord with me. You like it just steak and eggs and toast and hash browns or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a great breakfast, though, and it's also inspired by Alton Brown because of the whole searing technique that he kind of drilled into me because I kept watching the episodes over and over and over.
Exactly.
So, next up is probably one of Sheila's all-time favorite recipes. We have it all the time. I have to buy extra toilet paper because we eat it so much. So,
but it's good for you, though.
It is good for you.
It's the butternut squash recipe. And I actually ended up making it exactly the way that he does because he steams it. He takes the squash, peels it, splits it in half, takes all the seeds and everything out, quarters it up. Well, cubes it up, actually, into inch cubes, and steams it.
Does he steam it or roast it?
No, he steams
it. He actually steams it? Wow.
Yeah. And he shows you how you can roast it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the way you can roast it is you split it in half, scoop out the seeds, butter it, and then put salt and pepper on it, and roast it in the oven until it's soft. But because the squash is a funny shape, it's like skinny at the top, and it's fat at the bottom, and it just doesn't always cook evenly.
Mm-hmm.
Steaming is a far superior thing. And
you get more squash out of it, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
it seems
really
like you waste less.
Yeah. I remember you doing it where you'd roast it and scoop it out, and then the last couple of times you steamed it, and all she does is throw out the skins.
Yeah.
And you don't have to use as much squash. You actually had a better squash-to-soup ratio.
Yeah.
But yeah, you steam your squash or roast it. However, you throw that into some chicken stock.
Mm-hmm.
And you cook that, you hit it with your stick blender. Stick blenders are an Alton Brown standby. If you don't own one, you will be surprised at how versatile they are if you pick them up. And they're one of those ones that's so weird. Around Christmas time, they usually go on sale as a buy this to give somebody kind of gift. And they're really cheap for like $10.
Yeah.
If you don't own one, go pick one up around Christmas time. Now's the time to go looking for them. Because you can use them to make just quick drinks. You can use them for blending soups. You can use it for quick hummus. That
yeah.
kind of thing. I mean, they have a lot of uses.
This
it's like
the
a
only
portable
time
food processor.
That I'll say, I will blaspheme against Alton, is sometimes the stuff that he comes up with is a little bit too anal.
Mm-hmm.
And when he takes the Frisbee and cuts a slot and a hole in it, I'm like, man, you don't really even need to do that. It doesn't fly that far.
Though, speaking as the person who cleans the kitchen, if they are doing this next to a wall, if you have one of those nice little screens with a handle that you can put on top of your sauce while it cooks, ask the person making the soup to kindly shield the wall with the screen so you are not scrubbing squash soup off the wall the next week when you clean the kitchen.
It's orange.
It does make a difference. Every place we have lived so far, I've had to scrub squash soup off the wall since he's aired this episode. So definitely shield the wall, but you don't need to put the Frisbee on top because it doesn't really fly that. that far. Now, if you're going to lift the blender out of the soup all the time and go flinging it around the kitchen, well, yeah, you're going to make a huge mess and scald yourself. But don't do that. Excellent recipe, though. Highly recommended. Yeah. Tastes like nothing I've ever had.
It's the cream that really does it, to be honest. Because in his recipe, he calls for... Does he call for light cream or just regular cream?
Heavy cream.
He calls for heavy cream, but we use light cream, and it tastes just as good, I think.
I think it tastes a little bit better because it's not quite as heavy on the palate, and you don't feel quite so, at the end.
But the cream, the light cream does give that richness to it that just makes it so good.
Yes. Fantastic recipe. We also use this guacamole recipe, which we really enjoy. We did try to do the tortilla recipe. I don't have a tortilla press, so it has not quite succeeded yet. I'm going to give it another shot once I find a tortilla press that I'm willing to pay for. So,
I'd like to try his camping chili, where you use beef jerky.
Yes. Oh, we will make
it. He says you do not need a food dehydrator. In fact, food dehydrators apply too much heat for them to actually dehydrate the food. What you really want is some...
Blowhard 4000!
Yes. You want a box fan and some furnace filters that are... No. They're the cellulose ones. Yeah. They're the non-fiberglass ones.
Yes.
And you cut the food into small pieces. You stack it in between a bunch of furnace filters. So you have different layers of food, furnace filter.
And you bungee cord it to your fan, and then you point it out a window to drive the neighborhood dogs nuts, and you just blow it for like 18 hours or 24 hours.
And it's dehydrated by wind rather than by temperature.
Now,
so I would love to make his jerky. It looks awesome. You do the same technique for dried fruit. But unfortunately,
and herbs as well.
Yeah.
We just haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
We keep saying we're going to get the stuff together, and we go to get the filters. We can't find the filters, or the fan's disgusting and needs cleaned, or something else is going on. It just never happens. So we do want to do it. He uses flank steak to do the jerky as well, which is, depending where you live, a fairly affordable cut of meat. And that's also one where I believe he uses an electric knife to cut it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a couple things that he uses over and over in episodes. An electric knife and the stick blender are definitely two of those.
Yeah. Because I think he freezes it and uses the electric knife to cut it, because that way you can get a thinner cut.
Now, the last recipe that I know we both have really enjoyed making has been, we only made it once, that's the sad part, is it sounds so strange, and people look at me like I'm crazy when I talk about it. But it's his soy chocolate pie recipe.
Oh, yes.
It sounds like a heresy. He did a whole episode about tofu.
Right.
And what you do is you take silken tofu, you melt your chocolate, you add your other ingredients, you mix it together, and it comes out like a vegetarian pie. You don't even have to bake it. You just pour it into the shell.
It's almost like the Jell-O no-bake cheesecake.
Yeah. It's semi-healthy except for all the sugar that's in it, pretty much. And it's amazing. I still don't believe, when I tasted it, that it was full of tofu. And I like tofu. That's the funny part.
And it just tasted really creamy. It tasted really smooth.
It tasted like it had the fat content of a chocolate mousse pie. So if you have some vegetarian friends that are looking for something a little different, maybe throw that one at them and kind of surprise them a little bit. I think they'd really enjoy it. And that was an old episode. That was a season 3 or 4 episode, too.
That was early on.
We have done some recipes of his that have not quite turned out too well. So just to prove we're not total, like, cultists, we're just fangirls, not cultists for Alton Brown. One was he did an episode about weight loss, and he's talking about how he saw himself on TV and he realized, oh my god, I look like Marlon Brando and I need to lose weight. And he lost, I don't know, 60, 70 pounds.
A lot.
In a disgustingly short period of time, which honestly
should have
been...
People actually thought that he had, like, cancer or something. They thought that he was going through chemo or radiation therapy.
Well, he went from looking like Alton Brown to Skeletor.
Yeah.
You know, he should have been chasing He-Man around in the episodes instead of making cakes or something. But he talked about how he did it. And some of the things he did, we eat as a part of a healthy diet so we can indulge later on. He talked about drinking smoothies in the morning. We were already drinking smoothies for a while. Breakfast smoothies are phenomenal. If you've never made one before, just look up some recipes for smoothies. The only thing you need to know about them is, one, you do need to put some yogurt in them because that helps make it smooth and gives it the right texture.
Yeah.
And you have to use frozen fruit. That way you don't have to add ice, and ice waters it down, and it makes it more like a slushy. Totally go with the frozen fruit. You don't have to buy frozen fruit. If something's in season and you're buying it cheaply, just freeze it yourself in a freezer bag.
Yeah.
If you live near an Aldi's, Aldi's has a great selection of affordable frozen fruit.
If you're in Canada, go to Almost Perfect. It's a chain that sells end runs of stuff and maybe seconds of things.
Get huge bags of frozen fruit there for a song. You can get a kilo of frozen blueberries for like $6.
Yeah.
And blueberries, frozen, are not a cheap fruit. And they're great, too, because they're full of antioxidants and things that are going to stave off the tumors if you buy the non-BPA-free polycarbonate. So it works out perfectly. Exactly. But he decided to make an avocado and anchovy spread to put on toast. Because avocados are full of everything that's good for you.
It was sardines, because it was the sardicado.
Oh, I'm sorry, sardicado sandwiches. Yeah. Sardines are full of awesome things, too. Avocados are full of awesome things. I love avocados. So Sheila made this for us. I took one whiff of it, and I looked at it and said...
I hadn't even brought it to the bloody living room yet.
No!
You could smell it from the kitchen, from like 10 feet like, away. I'm not eating that.
And I looked at her and said, if I eat this, this may turn me off of avocados. And I really like avocados. I eat them on rice with sesame seeds. I mean, that's a meal to me. So pervert avocados like that to me was just horrible. She's like, okay, don't worry about it. I'll eat it. You can go eat something else. She takes a couple of bites. She didn't even make it through one open-faced sandwich. And even she hangs her head and says, this is terrible. I can't continue.
Yeah. It's just, it's incredible. Incredibly fishy.
Oh.
Like, and I used to eat them when I was a kid.
Before your taste buds developed, apparently.
Obviously. But it was just incredibly fishy. It was really, really strong. And I was like, I like it, but not that much. And, yeah.
They got double bagged and taken out to the dumpster right away. Because the whole apartment reeked of sardines.
Yeah, horrible. It was like, open the balcony door, light 4 sticks of incense. And
yeah. And the other
one... I went and brushed my teeth twice and... It was pretty bad.
One of the other recipes we did that didn't come out so well was the 40 clove chicken. It sounds like such a good idea in practice. You cram a chicken full of cloves kind of thing. It just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't taste very good.
Well, I'd had before this chick that we knew, Kirsten, she made 40 cloves of garlic and a Mickey of brandy chicken. And that tasted great.
I think they needed the brandy but, in it, to be honest. Yeah,
I think it needed the brandy.
Because it just tasted flat. It tasted like something was missing, and I literally added everything that was in the recipe. This usually we try it. The first time we do the recipe, we follow it to the letter.
And then decide just, what improvements we're going to make, if any.
Yeah, or not necessarily improvements, just what things can we change to appeal
like,
to
I really
our
like
palates.
This, but it needs to be a little bit less salty. Exactly. I really like this, but it could use more of this.
Exactly. It's just like the rib rub recipe. We love the recipe he did for his ribs. It's a great idea. You rub the ribs, you let them sit in the fridge, you take them, you pour a braising liquid that he gives a recipe for over top of it, you bake it low and slow. You don't even have to grill it. You bake it low and slow. If you're really ambitious at that point, you can pour the liquid off, you can boil the liquid down into a sauce, mm-hmm. and paint the ribs with the sauce and serve it. Or if you're like me and you're not so ambitious because you're not patient enough to wait for the sauce to boil down, you go ahead and use some kind of other barbecue sauce, which we've looked up a recipe and we use a mustard-based barbecue sauce out of Sheila's homemade mustard that's really good on the ribs instead.
Yeah, it's called the Carolina-style mm-hmm. barbecue sauce.
And the rib recipe is amazing. The rub recipe is amazing, but it's way too heavy on the salt.
Yeah.
The first time we did it, it was like eating a salt lick, and we decided, let's back off on the salt a little bit.
Yeah.
Then we took that, and we applied it to a pork loin, and we did pulled pork with it, but then I tried to do it ahead of time so I could pour the liquid off, let it freeze for a little bit, and then pull the fat out of the liquid, and pour the liquid back into the roast after I shredded it,
mm-hmm.
and it comes out awesome, and it's kind of a hybridization of, I think, his pulled pork recipe and his rib recipe. And it's some weird mutated child that works really well and everybody seems to like.
Yeah, because it's an oft-requested recipe.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's great to take to a potluck because then you can throw it with all the moisture into a crock pot, put a little extra barbecue sauce in it, and put it on low, and it's going to stay hot, and you don't have to worry about
it. It's going
to
stay moist, too. It's not going to dry up to be all...
And,
you know when you get, like, really, really dry turkey, and you're, like, gagging on it? It tastes good, but it's so dry, it's just, like, ripping the moisture out of your mouth and throat.
Yeah. And I've honestly, I don't know, I've made it so many times now, I even forget where I've pulled some of the parts of the recipe from for it.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of it's come
like
from his bits in here and there
kind of
thing.
It's got bolts on its neck and everything.
Yeah, but it's great. It's very versatile. So, the nutshell of this, the Cliff Notes version of this, is Alton Brown has so many awesome things. We felt out of what we have in our steady rotation in our diet, we really needed to devote an episode talking about what we really enjoy. And this is a break from the normal, because we usually talk about what other people cook. We never talk about what we actually make at home.
Well, we mention it sometimes in passing, but not really ever go into detail about it.
Yeah, and we cook a lot.
Yeah.
And surprisingly
enough,
we don't
always eat out.
Yeah, we cook at home. We cook fairly healthy, so we can go out and indulge and eat these horrible creations that no person should actually consume on their own. Because when we go home, we eat the Alton Brown recipe where we pulled 9/10 of the salt out of it and half the butter. So, anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
Wow, this was definitely a pubcast. And to bring it full circle for pubcasting, he also has episodes about alcohol.
He's got a lot of episodes lately about alcohol.
I know. And about making beer. He is a home brewer.
About how you can use alcohol in cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And about how to mix drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
He has a lot of alcohol-based episodes.
That's a lot of stuff in, like, season 12.
And believe it or not, a lot of this is on YouTube. So it's easy to find. Go forth and watch and become the acolytes that we are of Alton Brown.
If you want to support Alton Brown, buy his books.
Yes.
Because he doesn't really get any royalties from Goodeats, which I think is why he's not aggressively trying to rip them down off of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
He sold the rights for Goodeats whenever he started making it, and he gets paid for the show to make it, but he doesn't get any royalties from it. So check him out on YouTube. Definitely go and buy his books, because mm-hmm. they're awesome. They're full of great information.
Yes.
The episodes are entertaining as hell.
Definitely.
They're just great to watch. So, and go and experiment.
Yes, that's the whole point of it. He encourages experimentation just like he experiments. So if you find something in the episode or the recipe that you don't like, rip it out. Throw something else in. If you decide the banana bread's a little bit bland, go ahead and throw those jalapenos in. They're probably going to taste great to you. That's what it's all about, because it tastes good to you.
Exactly.
So this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Spy Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed the Spy Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.